Welcome, folks, to episode 3667 of the Survival Podcast. Today, we're going to have Andy McCann on. We're going to talk about building resilience from the inside out, father's journey through Crohn's, carnivore, and to real health sovereignty. And Andy's always a great guest. He's always excited about everything. I think I can get Andy excited about an ant moving a grape seed or something, but it just makes him really fun to talk to. And we'll be talking about restoring your health, basically, with fitness, activity, and diet versus drugs, chemicals, and doctors. That's kind of a synopsis of what we'll be talking about today. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day, though. Sponsor of the day number one today is Above Phone, where you can take back your technology and your digital sovereignty with devices from Above Phone, including the Above Phone, the Above Book, and the Above Tablet, all of which use open source independent software and independent apps that protect you from the spying of the carrier, the spying of the app maker, and the spying of the device manufacturer, because they all do that. Then they take your data and they sell it to anyone that wants to pay for it. I would say the highest bidder, but that's not even how it works. They just sell it to everybody that pays at least enough, depending on how much information they want on you. And they give it freely to the government. That way they can continue to operate with complete indiscretion, because the government likes that. You can change all of that with Above Phone. I know you're thinking but what if I can't work it? They give you an onboarding consulting call for free whenever you buy a device from them, and it's really not that hard anyway. They also are really not that hard to use, as I was saying. But I know you're also thinking but I need this one app, or I need these certain apps that are only on the Google Play Store or whatever. You can still use those apps too. You can just kind of put them in their own little jail cell, where they only do what they do when you let them out. So check them out today. And if you shop at Above Phone, you can get $75 off any phone at Above Phone if you're an MSB member. Next up today is JM Bullion. Now, you guys know I'm huge on Bitcoin. I think it's the best investment you can make. But I'm big on hard money. Gold and silver are exactly that. You should get your gold and silver from JM Bullion because, one, they give you a discount. Two, they ship your order free. Three, I have a direct line into the president if there's ever a problem. There hasn't been one in years, honestly, but if there is, I have a direct line into him, which is what I require of a sponsor. And they've supported the show that you listen to for over a decade now. So why would you buy from anybody else? Check them out today at jmbullion.com. With that, let's get our guest on, Andy McCann from CrossFit Garage and the Survival Podcast Expert Council. Welcome, Andy.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
Hey, I'm glad to have you on, man. People know you because you've been on the show a lot. You're on the show almost weekly with Expert Counsel. But there's some new people here and there. So just for backstory, who was Andy McCann before he was running a CrossFit Garage? And what led you to this whole world of fitness and nutrition?
Yeah, sure. So the short of it is I was an electrical engineer out of Georgia Tech, went into tech sales, and one day realized, hey, me and all my buddies are dying and not living a good life, and eventually fell into doing this CrossFit thing. And the precepts therein, I mean, it doesn't have to be CrossFit, but just what does this journey look like as we get older? Yeah. And so I'm out here in Woodstock, Georgia, and we started a gym, CrossFit Garage, back in 2008, and just been doing that ever since. And realizing that a lot of us men make really, I guess, uninformed choices. And, we put our head down, we start working, and we don't really look up until we're 50 or maybe 60, and we get that watch, thank you for working here, and then retire and die. And you're like, what happened? Why did we all just die off? So I've recently been very passionate about this thing I heard a comedian say and did some research on it. Apparently when us men hit 50, we enter the drop-dead years. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. There's a term for this? Nah, I don't like this at all. So that's, man, my new thing is, how do I keep my friends from dying?
Yeah, I've always said when you hit your mid-40s, your extended warranty wears out.
Exactly. So how do you push the shelf life out? I want to move not only my actual life expectancy, but that functional. I want to keep moving. I want to do stuff on my homestead. I don't want to just live. I want to live well. And how do I put those together? And, man, it is a sad state of affairs when you look at statistics.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's get people caught up. You were on a show not that long ago, late last
usually
year.
Usually January-ish. I usually
maybe on. It was early this year. Yeah, something like that. And it was after the workshop. Yeah. But what's changed? for you since last time you were with us?
Yeah, so, well, one is that big passion on what can we do as 50-year-old men. I mean, I'm passionate about that because I am a 50-year-old man. What can we do to stay alive? I've picked up some extreme weird stuff, which we can cover as you see fit, but I don't like to recommend a thing unless I've tested a thing. I don't do reviews about Vavor or any of that. I just use a product, and then, hey, if you want to try it out, great. So I picked up this thing. It's called an electro foot bath. Basically, you stick your feet in salty water and put an electrode in there, and it sucks stuff out of your feet. And it is the weirdest thing I have ever seen. Have you ever done something like that?
No, but I'm glad you brought that up because I was supposed to ask you about that in Tennessee, and then you left. My wife saw that video, and she's like, what the hell? So what the hell is the deal with that? Because that was
question. Guys, this episode is about, you know, Jack said, hey, let's meet the expert counsel. So you're going to hear inside of my head, and it gets crazy in here. So this electro foot bath, we saw it years back when I started going to a chiropractor. So before I thought chiropractors could really do a thing, I was like, sure, you're going to crack my back and all my stuff is going to be healed. And yes, I do see a chiropractor now. It's been like 20 years, but they have this thing. And I'm like, as an engineer, I just don't really get what's going on. But essentially, I'm going to do a whole podcast on this because it's blowing my mind.
Okay.
You take this diode and you put it in salty water with your feet. It completes the circuit. And this electricity is pumping through basically and pulling stuff out of your feet. Now, there are six people in my family. So I said, well, one, let's just do it without anything in there and see what happens. And nothing happens because you didn't complete the circuit. It makes sense.
Okay.
But when you put other people's feet in there, and you can do your hands, but it gets boring if your hands, you know, you can't really do your iPhone with your feet. So put your feet in there. But it sucks stuff out. What stuff? Man, I don't know. But they have color charts to tell you what's going on. And everyone in my family comes up with different stuff. So Evan, who's got the Crohn's diagnosis, it comes out with like stuff that you would expect, parasites and a fungus or whatever. My younger son, his mostly fungal stuff. Mine is joint inflammation, which I do a lot of CrossFit. So you'd imagine that's something. But it's coming out of your feet. What? I don't know. So, Dorothy, I don't know exactly yet why it works and how it works, but I'm researching.
I mean, her exact words, whatever it was freaking gross.
It was disgusting. And it's coming out of your foot. Now, here's the other weird one. You can look at it, and there's, like, black dots. So these things will, like, come together. So I guess it's, like, metal that's been ionized and it's attracting to each other. But you'll have, like, floating little dots of metal in out of your feet. Dude, it's weird. I would suggest
Have you looked to see like any research into this? Like, because I could see like, you know, thinking back to the 1800s and people running around selling, you know, Dr. Smith snake oil. Like, can you make this machine like make this look gross, like some kind of chemical reaction going on? But what's interesting to me is you get different results from different people. That seems to give it a little bit more credence, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So here's the other thing. So, stupidly, they sent the machine that I bought off of Amazon. I hit T-Spaz first and then go to Amazon, right? But I bought this thing off of there. It's got all these reviews. Been using it for, like, I don't know, a couple months now. And they sent it with a pack of salt. And I thought, oh, well, you use this salt in the solution, that's salty water.
Yeah.
That's not it. Their salt was Epsom salt for, like, an Epsom bath, not basic table salt. So it didn't really work. And so this is the thing that helps me understand that, yes, it's not just the snake oil, because I used the wrong setup. And I told my wife, hey, I bought this thing, but I don't know if it really works. And she's like, you're an idiot. You use Epsom salt. Everyone knows don't use Epsom salt. And I'm like, everybody knows that? So, yeah, so obviously some people do. So I put table salt in it, and it worked like a charm. So, you know, it just being by itself does nothing. Put your feet in there. Put different feet in there. It does a thing. And guys, it's disgusting. If you go, I got a lot of you have been sending me questions about it. And that's why I decided to do something on it. But I put some stuff on Facebook and on YouTube. You can see it. It's disgusting.
Yeah, that's what Dorothy said. I didn't see it.
It's nasty.
You did it right about the time of the workshop at Nicole's.
Yes.
And that's why I was probably drinking Bloody Marys in the airport or something. So, yeah. I've seen stuff like it before, but I've always been very skeptical.
Man, I'm with you. When you go into, like, again, guys, hey, I try a lot of stuff, and I can't tell you if it does or doesn't work. I'll say this is another thing that I just started doing. My wife got into these X39 patches, okay. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't really have anything wrong with me. Let me wear it and see what happens. I used to, like 2 years ago, I've been doing this for a while now. My hair was all white. Is it turning my hair black, or is it something else that I'm eating? I don't know. But so I do some of that. There's another one that I've been doing, and this is recent. I'm like, I've been talking to Ken Daniels, and it has come up in my research that the reason that we enter these drop dead years is it moves from, so basically from like 10 to 45, the majority reason why men die, it's about 300 in every 100,000, is suicide and accidents. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I get that. And then at 50, it changes to blood clots in your brain or blood clots in your heart. So basically, I've got this idea, if you can clean your blood, maybe you can resist some of these statistics. So I started giving blood every 8 weeks. That's what they recommend. You can't go any sooner than that. So I'm trying out this thing. They say, hey, if you give your blood, give blood, it'll force it to make new blood, and you could potentially be healthier. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah. I do know people with high iron, like over high levels of iron in their blood, which a lot of people actually have and don't know unless you're tested for, because it's not going to show up as anemia, because that's the exact opposite.
Right.
That's like the only thing that you can do is you donate blood, and then that reduces the heme in your blood.
Yeah, so something else that I heard, again, man, you hear a lot of things in the world that I'm in, like, hey, stick dry needles in your back. Let's cup your back. You hear a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So is this true? I don't know. But if you have a lot of iron in your blood and you're cooking in cast iron, they're like, hey, maybe that's a thing. So I know people who backed off of cast iron in their cooking and then did the blood test and it dropped. Is it causation or correlation? I don't know.
No,
but that's the thing. So this is a funny story on the giving blood. So I was like, all right, I don't remember how to give blood. Let me go back and
remember how?
It's been a long time. Like, how do you set it up? How do you go online?
Oh, okay.
What do you do?
Right?
So I was like, all right, let me just do a quick Google search or Brave search in my case. But anyway, let's see what happens. First thing that popped up was, hey, you can choose vaccinated or unvaccinated blood. I'm like, really? I didn't know that. And I don't know where that went to, but I was like, that's weird. There's a choice somewhere in some city where you can give blood. Anyway, so I found the Red Cross, found a location, said, hey, I'm going to go give blood today. I actually gave blood the day before I went up to Nicole's. I figured, I'm going to be driving. I'm not going to be working out. Let me go give blood. I go in there and I get my the biometrics done, because they won't let you give blood if your blood pressure is too high or if you're, I guess, sick. I don't know. So the guy does my heart rate and he's like, wow, 55 beats per minute. I'm like, oh, that's good. And then he does my blood pressure and he's like, wow, 103 over 65. And he looks at my shirt and it says CrossFit, because that's all the shirts I have.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, well, you do CrossFit. I get that. But how are you eating? And I said, well, I do carnivore. And he's like, carnivore? I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know the other kind, but yeah.
Yeah. So I said, I've been eating basically beef, eggs, and salt and some goat cheese for a long time. And he's like, well, how long? I said, well, about 10 months. And he said, no, you'd be dead. I'm like, well, I don't. Okay. So I'm fascinated. My stats were pretty good, but I haven't had a measure since I started doing carnivore. I just hadn't even thought about heart rate and blood pressure. But Jack, man, I am eating more salt in a day than I would eat in probably an entire year before. I eat a lot of salt and my blood pressure is like, it's super low. I'm eating all this red meat with all this fat, all this brisket. Man, I don't know what to tell you. This stuff does not make sense when you look at it through the lens of a doctor.
Sure. Sure. I've always wanted to try to put some sort of study group together, like a challenge, and actually get people's lab work and go to a group of doctors that would agree to review it and give their opinion, and then give their opinion on what would happen if these people went keto or carnivore.
Right.
And then put them on it for 8 weeks and then bring them the lab results 8 weeks later back without telling them, and say, what do you think of these lab results compared to the last set of lab results? And then let them explain, well, where'd all the improvement come from?
Man, I'm with you. I think with your audience, you could probably pull some people together that would do that. And I think there's a pretty easy one, like Dr. Ken Berry, and even like cooking well with Ken Daniels. Like, you could probably get a subset of group that would really like nail down and do this thing. It's just, you know, hard things to do. So
Now,
I will
also
say this.
Getting people that actually will stay on it, because once you start something like that, like compliance is actually a part of it too. And I think there's a lot of people that when you talk about these different ways of eating, they're like, oh my God, how would you? Well, I don't know. What if you tried it? And what if you tried it for like a month before you quit like a bitch, right? What if you did it for a month? And what if, like, when you initially didn't like certain things about it or whatever, what if you just tried the Jack Spirico matches, which is where you shut the fuck up and do it anyway? Right. And you did that for like 30 to 60 days and then see how you feel. Because I always warn people, like, especially when they're like I was when I started. Like, if you're overweight and you've been abusing your body for 15, 20 years, you have a ton of toxins in your body, and you do this, when that fat starts melting, and it will, it is going to dump toxins, and your body's going to have to get rid of that shit. And you will have some, maybe 25% have nothing, they just get better, right? Like, 70, 75% of people have some version of keto flu. And if you don't prepare somebody for that, then as soon as it happens, they say, oh, this doesn't work for me. No, fucking Cheetos don't work for you. Do you think it feels good for a heroin addict when you take the heroin away? No, it fucking sucks. But how do you get the heroin addict to not be a heroin addict? You have to take the fucking heroin away. You don't go like, well, use a little less heroin, right? That's not how you solve a heroin addiction, right? You can't solve a sugar carbohydrate addiction with a little bit of carbohydrate and a little bit of sugar, because it will become very quickly a lot of carbohydrate, a lot of sugar. I think one of the things you'll probably agree with is it's not even really a sugar addiction. It's a sugar and fat together addiction. Yeah. If you give people like a bowl of sugar, say, here, eat it with a spoon, they're not going to do that for okay, there'll be some weird fuck that'll eat the whole bowl, right? But 90% of people are going to be like, no, this isn't good. But mix it with butter, right? Mix it with butter, and now they'll eat that. They'll butter and sugar make cookie. Right.
It's a crazy thing. I use that same statement on people. Like, Pixie Sticks exist. I actually don't know if they exist anymore, but you remember that. It was basically
I remember those.
Flavored sugar, cut the top and just down that sugar.
Yeah.
But if you took the same amount of sugar that's in, like, a can of Coke or something and said, spoon that into your pie hole, you just can't do it.
No.
So I think that's – so I've got a couple people in our gym that's also doing carnivore, and that struggle right there is real. It's the habits and the addictions that you have that you can't get out of. So there's no real good answer on how do you get over being addicted to grains or sugars besides punch it in the face. Eat an olive, eat a pickle, eat something else that isn't sweet to get over it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So somebody asked me the other day, would you recommend the carnivore diet? I'm like, so maybe.
It depends.
You kind of have to be a bit odd in the head to be this restrictive.
What I would tell is, like, I generally tell people start at least something. So like my baseline start is no more than 100 carbs a day. And that includes net. That's not net. That's total carbs. No more than 100 carbs a day. Right. And no seed oils, none of the garbage food, none of that. That's at least start there. Right. And what I want to get people to is a true keto diet. If you want to eat green vegetables and all, I do. Go ahead. But get that carb restriction down to like 20, 25 net a day. And also don't have 25 carbs in one meal, like break that between two meals. And try to get into at least a few days a week into a two-meal-a-day situation. And then figure out what you want to do next.
Right.
Like, and get through, because what's going to happen is most people are, and you probably didn't go carnivore first.
No,
you didn't. You probably went keto first. And then and some people will go, like, some people literally will get to a point, if they're like at 75 carbs or less in a day, they'll lose all their weight. Right. All their labs come down. Like, for some people that works. This shit about everybody being the same is bullshit. It's not true.
And here's the thing that I'm going to throw out too, that it's not scientific, but I feel this to be true in this research of cleaning your blood. Man, I get it. There are different blood types. I'm A positive. You could be A negative. So if you think about this, that we both have hearts, we both have kidneys, we both have stomachs, we both have livers. But the literal thing, the oil in our system is different. If the oil in our system can be different, then maybe our metabolism can be different too. So maybe carnivore works for me and you. I think it would work for everybody. But maybe somebody else is, you know, all vegetables. I don't know. I think that the one size fits all probably isn't right. And doing it your way is probably the smartest. Like, hey, I cut back a little bit. So I spent I don't know, like 10 years not eating sugar and grain. So I got over that hump quick. And the only reason I got into this is basically they told Evan, hey, we should cut your colon out. And he's like, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah. So, and that's your son, right? He was diagnosed with Crohn's.
Yes.
And what led you to like, okay, let's, I think you were more keto.
Yeah.
And you went lion because that's really good for the Crohn's thing. And I think you did it like to support your son initially.
That's exactly it. So yeah, so we'll move into that one. So first off, thank you for those who text and email and ask about him. I've got a couple of guys that I've been talking to about their son or themselves, and he's doing great. He's done with college for the summer, and he's looking forward to eating a lot of meat that we can cook here at home. The hard part about this whole thing was like, you see your son come back from college, and he went from 180 pounds to 117 pounds. You're like, dude, you are going to die. And what do? We went to the doctor, and the doctor said the normal stuff. Hey, you should take these drugs, and maybe we'll cut your colon out. And he's like, Dad, I want to try something else. So he found Michaela Peterson. He listened to her thing about the lion diet. And I said, dude, I'll go along with you because it sucks to do it by yourself. The weird thing is, if the doctors really cared, then the doctor that we went to that we didn't pick should have eventually said, hey, are you still alive? They don't care. They have never called back. They've never asked, what did you do? Are you okay?
It's amazing how worried they are when you tell them something, but the follow-up is absolute dog shit. How worried were you really?
Zero, because I didn't take their drugs. And Evan. So he's a 20-year-old, well, 21 now, but he was 20-year-old back then. And he said, I think I'd like to do something else. I said, well, technically you're an adult. You can do whatever the hell you want. So he chose the lion diet, and he found a guy, Josh Detch, with gutsolution.ca, and no affiliation. I just love what they're doing, and it gave him a mentor. I'm a huge fan of, if you want to speed up the process, hire a mentor, because they've already done it and they want your money. They're going to help you. They're going to tell you what you're doing right and wrong. And these guys have been tremendous. As a matter of fact, I just signed my other son up for him because he's been fighting some leaky gut scenario. I'm like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing here, but this company does that. So, yeah, it's been a weird thing. So if you guys are curious, like I just want to fix my health, yeah, carnivore would be the way to go. If you have a what do they call that? That when your body attacks itself,
autoimmune
issue. Autoimmune. Thank you.
Yeah.
Then it seems like the lion diet with its ruminant meat is the way to go.
Have you ever thought of this, Andy? Almost every chronic disease is autoimmune. Almost every drug that they advertise on TV is for a chronic disease that is autoimmune. And almost every drug for an autoimmune disease does one of two things. Weakens your immunity. Or strengthens you. Either your autoimmune disease is causing an attack on your body, or it's weakening your immune system. And when you look at it that way, I promise you, other than like the GLP-1s, which I believe in a way is also an autoimmune, but it's like self-inflicted, right?
Yeah.
Almost every drug you will see advertised will be something that either suppresses or boosts the immune system for a chronic illness that has never been cured by anyone ever. And this is what all the drug companies are making all their money on. Pfizer's been in business like 120 years. You know, they've never cured a fucking disease.
I was just about to say, you posted a thing. That right there. That doesn't make any sense.
Not one. Anybody out there thinks that Jack's fucking gone nuts now, so is Andy. Go find me a drug that Pfizer developed that cured a disease. Not treated it, cured it. They're not in the curing business.
No, and that's the... I get it. It's their business. And this is I'm ashamed to admit this. I'm a red-blooded capitalist, but apparently capitalism can go too far. So I don't know. Maybe it's moralistic capitalism. I want us to
it's fascist capitalism where they have an umbrella of protection by government and a cooperative thing that gilds out competition.
Right.
I mean, that's what it really comes down to.
Right.
Like, so they have the Drug Enforcement Agency, they have the EPA, NIH, all of these things that are supposed to regulate them. Well, Pfizer, Bayer, Merck, you know, all these companies end up becoming basically clients of these regulatory bodies, and then you end up with regulatory captures. So I'm not going to put Pfizer out of business because I fund my whole fucking department off of the money that they pay us, right? So
that's
like,
it.
And when I find them, they're like, okay, here's your money for this year. It's in a, like, I always say Excel never lies. So if you build a business, you build an economic model, it's right in there, I guarantee you. Pfizer, Merck, all these companies, just here's money set aside for annual fines.
Yes to that. And additionally, if I have shareholders and I need to make a profit, then as a sales guy, like I know this as a sales guy, I found the capacity engineers that I sold to the RBOX, and I got the capacity engineers to spec in my equipment. So the first levels had no choice, right? So I went beyond the source, and that's just a good capitalism. But is it right? Should I have done that? I mean, I don't know, right? So the job is to create wealth through this business. Well, that's unfortunate when the business is also to save people, because I don't know if they're saving anybody. I need to make some money, and this is how we do it. And I commend them on working the system really, really well,
yeah.
But maybe they shouldn't have.
So let's come back to Evan here. What was like your hardest part of doing that for him and supporting it, and also not like making it your thing? Like people like you that are trainers, like, come on, one more rep. Like you end up sometimes almost taking over for the person you're helping. How did you balance that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there's nothing so lonely as a journey by yourself, especially if it's very unique. So you take a college kid, how many of them have Crohn's? Apparently a lot, but and then you go on this journey of, I'm going to eat this lion diet. So I said, hey, son, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to do it with you. The hardest part was the emotional impact, which is Josh Jetch's group is great with this. I'm not great with emotions, and I can't simulate what he's feeling. He's like, Dad, I'm in college, and they want to go do, I don't know, like the mixer with the fraternity and sorority, and I can't show up. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of loneliness that goes along with these things. And I would just say, if anybody out there has family member or yourself, right, that's got something like this, talk about it. Ask them questions. People don't understand what you're going through in your mind and your heart. And that's been we talk a lot, and he's good now. But like that first 4 months while he was eating at college, just ruminant meat, salt and water. I mean, I'm like, dude, you can't go back to college unless you're gaining weight. So he gained weight. The other thing is, you know, I do what I do here. So I'm at the gym. People are asking questions. I do a little a podcast. I'm on YouTube bunch. And so, yes, I don't want to take it from me. Hey, this is a fun thing. You don't want to sensationalize or storyize your kid's thing. But on the other side, I've got two or three people from your audience that I text with maybe weekly or monthly that are going through the same thing. So it's his son. And so I've offered to connect Evan and his son to talk. Evan wants to share it, but I mean, he's at college, so he's not going to do what we're doing here. He wants to go, you know, do his college-y thing. So I've been trying to pull him in and let him talk about that story and help people understand that. I mean, it does seem to work, but it's probably not for everybody. And there's that emotional impact that, man, you just can't do by yourself. So it sucks to go it alone. I mean, offer to walk with them or to meet them at a place that they can't eat. Like a Brazilian steakhouse, we're good.
Yeah, you can eat all the freaking picanha you want, right? Like you just keep turning the thing back to green. You turn it to green and they walk away. You're going, bitch, I wasn't done yet. Like, let's get some more. The beauty of something like lion or even just straight carnivore is that it's such a reductionist diet. If you do have certain triggers, let's say you do it for 30 days and you're feeling pretty good. Well, and you want to know, like, do the oxalates really fuck me up if I have a couple handfuls of spinach? Now that you've wiped the slate clean, if you eat a couple handfuls of wilted spinach with your steak and you don't feel good, well then, fuck, oxalates are bad for me.
Right.
Where I might do it and, like, I actually feel better. And so you can add one thing back, let's say every other day for a week, listen to your body, and then say, okay, this thing works. Then you add one more thing. So carnivore or even lion can actually be a reductionist diet down to rebuilding the keto diet that's right for the individual. And then you might even find some things like I did. Like, I can eat all of the freaking nightshades I want, but when I eat nightshades and seafood, and I don't know why, but I know that I have a little bit of like a weird feeling. And it's not a sick feeling. It's not like I'm puking or shitting my brains out or something. It's just weird. And it's like, I don't really know what that is. So I'm just going to not do tomatoes with my shrimp, right? Like, it's that simple, right? Well, and I know that only from going to, like, an extreme and then coming back the other side of it.
The problem is seafood is much like black licorice. It's disgusting. Yeah. So
No.
I know. I don't like seafood, but I think
you're
right.
I'll tell you who was a brave bastard, though, the person that ate the first oyster.
Oh, gosh.
The guy that ate the second one, I got no props for it. But the guy that was like, looks like a giant loogie, but let's... Hey, Bill, you got some of that horseradish shit?
I'm going to eat this raw.
And then the next guy's like, oh.
Right.
But yeah, then, no. Okay, there you go. Yes, but yeah, the first person to do that, like, really, like, you had to be hungry.
So, and you're spot on about adding things back in. So it's an interesting thing. You talk about going on the journey with, in this case, Evan. I have found that I actually like eating this way.
Yeah.
I eat like 6 different things in its various ruminant meats, eggs, goat cheese, and salt. So I guess 4 different things. It's right. And so sometimes
when you say ruminant, you mean like you're not going to eat pig and you're not going to eat chicken and you're not going to eat fish. It's a red meat ruminating animal. So sheep or lamb or deer, like that's all good. Like, does it ruminate and is it a red meat?
Yes. And so I guess again, I'm going along with Evan. He's adding things back in, just like you said.
Yeah.
So while I personally choose ruminant meat because I just like them better, we do have chickens and we do process them. So I'm like, I'm going to eat my chicken. And he likes wings. So as you said, if you baseline this thing, so it's you said it in another podcast or another episode, it clears out your system and then it lets you reset and test. So I have literally seen this with my own eyes, guys.
Yeah.
Anecdotes become stories that becomes myth and legend. So I'm seeing this in my own life. I'm watching a kid add things back in and his body says, oh, hell no, you can't add that in. I don't want that. Yeah. So the other way to add in is in the appropriate amount. So like he originally did like, oh, I'm going to add in blueberries. He added in a bowlful. I'm like, you know, a blueberry comes in an individually wrapped thing. How about one blueberry? And he's like, that's probably a better idea.
So you like goat cheese. So goat cheese and like 4 or 5 blueberries.
Right.
That's better.
Don't overdo it.
Blueberries. Like blueberries are low carb, but they're not carb free. So if you eat a bowl, I mean, that's a significant amount of sugar. And it's also a lot of other, like one thing I would say for like a blueberry, a strawberry, a blackberry, those are plants that actually want to be consumed.
Right.
They want to be eat because it's how they propagate themselves. When you're eating something that doesn't have an advantage by being eaten, it's more likely it has some level of chemical protection because it doesn't want you to eat it. So like when you eat something like I eat leafy greens, but you're eating lettuce, like the lettuce does not benefit from us eating it.
No.
Right. It doesn't propagate because we eat it. It passes through our system. We poop it out and it grows somewhere else. When you eat a blueberry, there's seeds in it. When you eat a strawberry, actually, you're eating a stem. Strawberry's not really a fruit because the seeds are on the outside, right? And that's how you know that. So you're eating an inflamed stem, and the seeds are technically the fruit, and inside the seeds are actually the seeds. But it does benefit. I eat the strawberry, and if I'm living in caveman days, I go behind a tree and take a dump, and then you know maybe there's new strawberries. So those plants want to be eaten. Jenny was saying in the chat here, you know, like a lot of plants have chemical defenses. And I've talked about that too. Like, why do they have chemical defense? They can't run away. They can't run away. They can't bite. They can't do anything except become chemical factories. It's something like 98% of plants in the world are toxic.
Yeah.
Like, not your and my version of toxic. Like, science's version of, like, this will make you really sick and or kill you if you eat even a little bit of it. So, like, only 2% of the plants in the world are even edible for humans.
Right.
There is, I think, one animal, I think it's a keelback snake, that has actually toxic flesh. There's there's almost nothing, even venomous animals, you can generally eat them. It is just that, you know, you don't want to get bit or stabbed. Like venom, the difference between venom and poison is venom has to be injected. Poison can have multiple vectors to get into your system.
But I give you guys all permission to use venom and poisonous incorrectly, just like magazine and clip. Just use it incorrectly for the rest of your life.
I'm just saying you can kill a rattlesnake and eat it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're going to be fine, right?
Right.
You could be a dumbass and drink an ounce of rattlesnake venom, and if you don't have any sores in your mouth or any sores in your body, it actually will not harm you. But you don't know that, so I highly advise you against doing it. But My point is you could even take a scorpion fish, right? That is absolutely can be lethal if you step on one, or a lionfish that even if it doesn't kill you, it's very painful experience. They're delicious. You can eat them. So just by that alone, when we evaluate what we should base our diet on, maybe we should pick the kingdom where almost everything in it doesn't poison us versus the kingdom where almost everything in it does poison us. And then we'll leave mushrooms up for debate because it's kind of 50-50.
Yes. And there is a freedom in this simplicity. So my wife's I can't believe you're doing this. It's you don't have to. I'm I know, but I really enjoy it. Choose to eat steak with salt on it. I like it. This morning I had, let me tell you guys what I do eat. Cause Jack, you had a point, I guess it was against Ken. It was can you eat too much on the carb? You can.
Yes.
And so I eat about 4,000 calories a day. Yes, I do work out, do some CrossFit, but sometimes it's easy and sweaty or hard, whatever. I am moving a lot. So I'll eat 6 eggs for breakfast with a lot of salt. I'll eat 2 New York strips or 2 lamb chops for lunch. And then I eat about 0.5 pound of ground beef and 4 eggs mixed together with about a spool size of goat cheese. And now I've just recently started putting some hot sauce on it to just give it a different flavor. And that's it. That's all I eat. 10 months. Every once in a while, I'll try an avocado. And I'm it's all right.
Man, I love me some avocado. So, but that's the thing. We all figure out what works for us.
Yeah.
The beauty of what you're doing is when people are like, well, how do you go out to eat? Every place serves beef.
Yeah, so hamburger patties.
Vegan hellhole, which I'm not going to anyway. They don't have a steak. You got burgers? Yeah, bring me 2 burgers. What do you want on it? Nothing.
Nothing.
You got salt on the table,
a lot.
I'm good.
You
got
some
goat cheese?
Yeah. Some of them do. Now, this is a good hack for some restaurants will do this for you. I'll usually tell them I'll take 2 or 3 patties, depending on their size.
Yeah.
Give me whatever cheese I can get. And then can you put two over easy eggs on it? And they're like, yeah. And usually it's all about it's not on the menu. I don't know how to build this out. And I just tell them I have the ultimate survival tool. It's called cash. It becomes whatever you need it to be. So, it usually costs a little bit more, but you're out with friends, whatever.
All right, so let's move on. You mentioned your own health changed on carnivore.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked about labs and stuff. What do your blood markers look like? Have they gotten better, worse, the same? Because you were not, I've talked to people that do this, and, they were in shit health, and then they did this, and they got great health. You were in good health anyway.
Yeah.
Like I said, you did this for Evan. But did it still improve based on, your work? People said, you're I exercise. People get fucking tired watching you.
Right.
You move around so much, right? So that's part
of it. Because you now know some of those weights I'm moving.
Even with all the weightlifting and everything, and you were a good diet, did it actually get better even though you were already at a good baseline?
Yeah, so that was the thing that I was impressed with when I went and gave blood recently is I haven't changed anything in my life. And my wife will attest to this. I am a robot. I will do the same thing over and over and over and expect different results. So I guess I'm insane. But I'll do the same thing without complaint. And when I went and got blood drawn, which is going to be fun for me to go every 8 weeks or 8 weeks in a day to see this, my stats dropped. And the only thing I changed in my picture was eating carnivore and zero carbs. That's the only thing I changed. So I've had, they will tell you if you eat all red meat and all that salt, your blood pressure is going to go up and you're going to die. You're just asking for it. I did this little thing in ChatGPT because it's my best friend now. And I said, hey, tell me the markers and ask me all the questions and look at the actual table and CDC and tell me what is my life expectancy and what is my functional life expectancy. And then tell me what I'm doing right and what I should fix. And so I made a prompt and it's like, yeah, here you go. I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. So I had a couple of friends do it with me. But the change I put in there that my heart rate was 60 beats per minute and my blood pressure was 120 over 80. So basically normal stuff.
Yeah.
And then I went back and said, hey, I just got my biometrics. I want to see what it says. And again, it's ChatGPT. So do you believe
it? Yeah.
No, but yes. And so my blood pressure or my beats per minute dropped from 60 to 55. And then my blood pressure dropped to 103 over 65. And so I said, well, what changes happened? Guys, just by changing your blood pressure, it upped my life expectancy by 2 years and my functional life expectancy by 6. So I'm just saying, guys, you don't have to stop. I'm 50. Oh, no, that's too late. It's never too late. And you may find a thing that works for you. For example, during the one good thing that COVID gave me was I started drinking coffee, and Nicole's coffee. I went and did some testing. My testosterone is up from drinking caffeine. I don't even understand. That's not even scientifically possible.
Yeah.
But I measured it, and I went off of coffee for 30 days, measured, went back on for 30 days, measured, went off for 30 days. For whatever reason, I am
– stimulant.
Yeah.
Right. It probably stimulates everything, including hormone production.
Yeah. So, I mean, just don't give up. You can do a thing, and it doesn't have to be that tough. You just have to do it every day. You have to be very consistent. Consistency is the key, or that habit is the key for getting
better. Adaptation, right? Like you were talking about sweetened sugar and the addiction earlier. I don't know when you drink coffee, if you do cream or not, but I do. And when I, you know, if I go back 25 years, when I drank coffee, I never was big on sugar and coffee, but like a teaspoon of sugar to a big cup of coffee. And at one point, I'm like, well, if nothing else, I got to stop sugar, like direct sugar addictions. And
right.
So I did that. And like, I thought the coffee tasted like crap for about a week. Right. And then I started cutting back the cream because there was so much. There's no real sugar in cream. It's almost all fat. There's a little bit of lactose, which is indigestible. So you get a little tiny sweetness from that. After about a month of drinking coffee and cream, I had to really cut back the cream to like a little less than a tablespoon a cup because it tasted too sweet. Because as soon as you get your taste buds off that, it's no different than these people in China. I think it's the Sichuan province where like they start feeding babies hot peppers when they're born almost. And you know,
I saw that.
And eventually, like by the time these people are like 20 years old, they're eating a spicy dish. And if you ate it, you'd flatline. They'd have to take you to the ER and kill you. And I'm only exaggerating a little bit. Like, the only reason it wouldn't kill you is after the first bite, you'd be done. And you wouldn't eat anymore. You still might have heart palpitations. And they keep having to add more their whole life because they keep upping their tolerance because almost everything they fucking eat is hot. Right? Okay, I'm sure there's maybe something, like, negative about that. But it seems like those people live a pretty long time.
Right.
It's a stimulant, too. But if you do the same thing with sugar, the same thing happens. And the first time I bought a coffee in an airport, I went to a Dunkin' Donuts to get a coffee, first mistake. And they said, do you want cream and sugar? And I was still, you know, drinking with sugar. Cup about this big, and it looked like they were shoveling. It was like 5 tablespoons. And I'm like, whoa. And the guy's like, what? I'm like, dump that out. I want one of those, not 5 of those. And that's what it is people keep increasing their tolerance and therefore the amount they need to get this, just like a drug. Because guess what? Refined sugar is an absolute drug, period.
I mean, it looks like cocaine and it stimulates the same part. So on the tongue thing, that's been a weird journey I don't talk about it very much, but your tongue definitely changes and becomes aware of minute particles. So I was using this, I don't have one out here, but I use these LMT electrolyte packets, and I'll open up, pour it in, and I'll take that. So it's my easy on the go. I'm on the road. Let me just use theirs. I use the raw unflavored one, but I taste the flavor. So I'll give them to my family or my friends or whatever, and they're like, "Do you taste anything?" They're like, "No." So your tongue will become resensitized. So now when I eat goat cheese, it has a little bit of sweetness to it. Now, I know it doesn't, but I guess it's like Iocane powder, right? I've desensitized myself to it. And so it's fascinating the way you can reprogram it.
Yep.
But it takes a while.
Yeah. I mean, this is blood orange LaCroix. And the joke with LaCroix sparkling waters is, you know, the way they, you know, infuse orange flavor as they fly the plane with it in it over, like, because you can't taste it. You know what? You stop eating all that other shit. You're like, oh, that's
right in there.
Tastes like somebody put a squirt of blood orange juice in it.
That's exactly it. So
it's just your taste buds are so inundated with crap. And then you know what you end up doing? You eat more crap.
Right. To get that same. Yeah, you need to if you want more of that hype, more sugar, more caffeine, whatever, you got to keep adding it to it. So I guess, guys, what I would tell you is the journey isn't over at 50 or 60 or 75 or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, statistically, it says now that half the men you know will be dead at 72. Which is super sad. So, you know, let's fix that. Let's go at least for this audience. This
and everybody in this audience knows somebody in their life that seemed relatively okay that died around 66, 68. Everybody knows that person. And it wasn't cancer. It was right. Like they just had a heart attack or something.
It's clotting here in the heart or in the head. So there are things you can do, and it's not tough. I would encourage you to use ChatGPT and put in your own stats and then ask it. I mean, tell me some. I mean, is it going to be 100% right? No.
No.
But it's going to be very personal to you, and you'll see, oh, if I just this, it would really affect that. And it could be something like, you know, go for a walk after you eat. It doesn't have to be crazy hard. That's, I think the thing that I wish it would get across to people is it's not impossible. It's just improbable because you probably won't do it. But you can change, or you can get on the other side of the statistic with just a little bit of effort because almost nobody does it.
Yeah, yeah. Can you talk a little bit, like one of the things I like about you is it's not just food and fitness, right?
Yeah.
Like what you talk about is a firm foundation, food, fitness, and finance. And yes. That leads to all aspects of lifestyle design. What brought you to that? Because most of the people I know that are in your space, CrossFit, and that's it. Well, they're done, right? That's everybody do CrossFit. Yeah, well, that's not going to happen. Like, and even if you do, okay, that's great, but I've known really fit people whose lives are completely fucked, right? The only thing they have is their health. Remember the old thing, like, well, at least you have your health? Well, they do have that, but they don't have
nothing
money.
Else.
They don't have free time.
Right.
They hate their life and they hate their job. And the reason they're fit is because it's the only thing in their life they do like. So at least they do it.
Right. And sometimes those people do it because it's a thing they can control.
Yeah.
The rest of my life is out of control. So this is when fitness becomes not really a good thing for you because you're working on a disease. You need to come up with something else. So yeah. So I have a podcast for a long time. I just said, hey, it's a CrossFit Garage podcast. But really what I talked about was laying a firm foundation in fitness, food, and finances. And this is why I added finances, because you want a good life expectancy. You want to be above 72, but you also want a functional life expectancy to match really dang close, right?
Yeah.
So you need that functional bit. The problem there is you also need a wealth life expectancy. So, I mean, if you could live to you're 100, but you've got no finances, and now you're a burden on your family. Man, who wants that? So you got to listen to John and other people. And I mean, while I know you're not a financial guy, dude, the advice you gave back in 2018 about buying Bitcoin has got to be the best thing that I ever did. Guys, just listen to Jack and follow along. Sometimes Spirko Damas has got a thing. So I'm just saying, if a guy can read systems, listen to the systems. It's a good thing.
So I mean, I look at it this way, like, you can teach an absolute idiot how to build a fire if they'll do what you tell them to do, right?
Right.
You get the kindling, you get the tinder, you build the airflow, you put a little bit larger material, you put some bigger material, you light it, and it burns. I've seen people in IQ probably sub 75 that can build a fire. And I've seen people that are smart, but they're smarter than themselves, and they can't get a fire going. I remember sitting one time and trying not to touch it. We were at a thing at a church, and they were doing like outdoor movie night and all. And it got kind of cold, so they decided they're going to build a fire in a 55-gallon drum. And it's got holes, and also it'll work. And I'm listening to these guys, and finally somebody's going to leave. They're going to go to the store and buy a fire log because there's like five grown-ass men that can't get a fire going. If I'm like, God damn. You know, I'm like, so I just start grabbing up some grass and like some twigs, and I go over there, and they're trying to light basically fire logs.
The log, right.
Like the smallest thing in there as big as my wrist.
Right.
And I just started, and the guy's just about to leave, and I just throw one match in there.
Right.
And they're like, wow. Okay, and these guys weren't stupid. They just didn't know the system.
Right.
And a lot of times all we're talking about is learning a system and then apply it to your life.
And I would take that approach right there and put it in this fitness, food, and finance, right? There are some easy base hits, and most of us can make this in life. You talk about this. You have a book coming out about this.
Yes,
I did. The base hits in life that will make sense. You don't need to make a home run. You do not need to invent PayPal. Yes, it could be nice, but you don't need to do that. You need to do the basics. Like I'll give you an example. I had a buddy say, yes, also I'm doing carnivore. I'm like, okay, great. What are you eating? He's like, broccoli, potatoes, and steak. I'm like, so
you're not doing carnivore.
Yeah. Like, do you know what a carb is? They're like, yeah, it's bread. I'm like,
potatoes.
Okay. So educate yourself on some of the basics.
Like, what was it? Lord of the Rings? Potato.
Exactly that stuff, right? And so, on the other side of it is, the two guys I listen to the most, or the books that I've read that kind of inspired me the most, and they kind of go against each other, is Robert Kiyosaki and Dave Ramsey.
Okay.
I love their stuff. The easy base hit between them is, hey, real estate is kind of a no-brainer if you can do that, right? So look at those no-brainers. Look at debt. What is it actually? And, man, I get it. People are like, yeah, but you can write off your debt. Dude, until you get on the other side of I paid the house off, you just don't understand the freedom that is there.
And there's functional debt and there's infunctional debt, right? Like, so the fact that I can write off debt is great if the debt is functional, right? If I'm borrowing money at 4.5% and that's preserving capital, it's making 10%. And I'm writing off the interest because of how it's structured into my life. Wonderful, right? But I'm not going to take the loan just to write off the interest.
Right.
That's retarded. And it's amazing, again, how many smart people think that way.
Right? Yeah. And I've got guys like,
or they think people run businesses just for the tax loss. No. Right. There is not an entrepreneur in the world. It's like, I love that I have one of my businesses that loses money every year. That's not what you – people that say that have never actually built a business and have no idea how much blood, sweat, and tears goes into it. Because you don't do that just to lose money. It's like saying you tried out for the major league so you could play in the minors. You just don't do that.
Now, I do have a thing I'm going to add in here. It was a question that Matt had, Cersei, that he answered. It was like, hey, if you have a business that's not producing and the government won't let you have a failing business for 3 years in a row, he's like, just don't report some expenses. I'm like, oh, geez, that is such a brilliant thing. Yeah. Why did I never think of that? So the question came up then. I had some people listen to that same episode, and they're like, well, what business should I start? And guys, I'm going to say while I'm not a tremendous fan of like Mary Kay and Avon and all those things, but that MLM stuff is super cheap to do. You just buy a thing and then you can start expensing stuff and then just not write things off if you want to like make the money on it. So you could have a very low impact business if you find one of those things you're into, like, I don't know if Tupperware is still a thing, or like the LifeWave thing my wife does, or Pampered Chef or any of those things, it's a legit business.
Yeah.
And very low cost, like the startup. Do you have to have...
What we need, honestly, I can't think of what it's called. Oh, Alibaba, right?
Yeah,
Alibaba,
China, right?
And so China is going to be a trade mess for a long time. We need like a Alibaba in the Philippines or an Alibaba in like, you know, Sri Lanka or something. It's one of these developing nations that has cheap labor and technical capacity that's not inside the China syndrome loop here. Because I tell people you're much better off with a drop ship product of your own or something of your own than that, because you can actually make some money that way and you can build something you own. But
now, on the other side,
there's also the case like Kiyosaki does. Like, okay, it was a brilliant move by him when he released his first book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He put one line in there about network marketing companies. And he only did that because he was a legitimate author really already, because he had the horsepower with publishing to become one. And then every MLM leader in the world started using his book to push network marketing.
Yes.
And he got a guaranteed bestseller by doing that. But the point itself was actually more about the sales training.
Right. Yes.
That comes with one of those businesses.
Yes.
And that's the people that take it seriously. But there's other ways to get your sales trained. But I will say that there is a lot of solid sales technique in that industry.
And you said it before. You're always going to sell no matter what you do. If you're going to go out on your own, you have to sell. And if somebody tells you, well, I can't sell, I'm like, well, you just sold me in the fact you can't sell. So you've got to learn how to. Like,
did you ever get a date with a chick that was better looking than you deserved? You sold yourself.
You sold yourself. Yeah.
Right. You know.
So I think what people really would say is, so I have a coach at my gym. He said, hey, I just started. I want to coach because I want to be better at presenting. And I think that's the problem that most people have is my thoughts don't get jived correctly. I don't have my pitch and I don't maybe think well on my feet. So I would say go coach somewhere or go volunteer to be a soccer coach or something.
Yeah.
Do something where you have to stand up in front of people. They're going to ask you questions and that'll help you think on your feet. Just like what you do. I love it when you're like, hey, this morning at 10 a.m., I had no idea what I was going to do. And then you lay out this episode that I'm like, hey, that was pretty damn good.
And it's true, too. People think I'm bullshitting when I say that. To like, promise.
No.
You can ask my wife, man. 10 o'clock, what are you going to talk about today? I don't know. are you going to do a rewind? Nah, I'll come up with something. I go out and talk to the ducks and the fish, and I come back in, and she's like, what are you going to talk about that? I don't know. Growing fish, you know, or the fish said I should talk about chickens, or, you know. Right. Or, you know, I was out there, and the garden's looking pretty good. It's mid-season. There's some things that need to be done. All the time. Like, you just – I think that if you do anything long enough, you get good at it. And I've been doing public speaking long before TSP. I used to have to do public speaking on network test equipment. If you want to talk about a boring fucking thing.
I did it.
Right. Let's talk about the differences between near and far end crosstalk and the effects of attenuation on both. This is boring. And if you can figure out how to keep people that are technicians interested in that discussion, then talking about growing tomatoes is easy. But I think that's true for anything anybody does. If you do it long enough, you'll get good at it.
Yeah.
I'll never be a good baseball player because I'm blind in one eye. So, you know, it doesn't matter how hard I can hit the ball. You got a guy whipping the ball at me at even 80 miles an hour, let alone 93. I can't see the freaking ball. Like, it's just not going to happen. So we have limitations, but I could have been better than I was.
Right.
Right. As a martial artist, like, I was never, same reason, I would never have really gone far in competitive martial arts, especially anything with striking, because as soon as that coach goes, that fucker can't see out of his left eye, and you move into this empty space of mine, like, I got nothing. So we all have these limitations, but it doesn't mean we can't be better at them.
Right.
And then the business is, figure out the thing that you can be great at, not necessarily the best, but great at, that you also like.
Right.
And if you like it and it starts making you money, this is where you follow your passion comes from. I promise you, if you find something you like and you build it right so it doesn't make you miserable and you start making money doing it and you make enough money doing it to support your lifestyle, you will fucking love it.
Right.
You will fall. Just like we meet a person. We don't like, I met this girl and then I fell in love. That's a recipe for divorce. Was she a stripper and are you a soldier on a trailer base? Like, that's exactly where my head goes when somebody says that. Like, we fell in love, what, like over a year? No, like immediately. Okay, you're fucked. We meet people. We like them. We spend time with them and then we fall in love with them. And the same thing can be true of business or diet or fitness regimes. You're not going to love it the first time you go out and really pound yourself and wake up in the morning and you feel like, even though you're a man, you feel like you have boobs because your freaking pecs hurt, you know, and when you walk up the stairs, they bounce. Like, you're not going to feel good about that the first time, but if you do it long enough, you might fall in love with it. I love hitting a heavy bag. First time I did it, I really didn't like it. I liked it while I was doing it. I didn't like the way I felt, you know, 6 hours later.
Yeah, sure. No, any of that stuff. So that's, and that's right. So these, mastering the basics or finding the thing that you're not good at and practicing is a way to go. I think the other thing you said it right, make it fun, make it a habit. The other one that I've been trying to experiment with is the Venn diagram of life. So
yeah,
weirdly, I've enjoyed getting older. I like being 51. It's, I know who I am. I've removed some of my, you know, my shaking back and forth, you know, all that stuff. You get better at who you are and you know what you do and don't like, but more specifically, you can take those things and start overlapping them. You're like, wow, I really enjoy this group of friends that I have found because they're into the same sort of thing. So, like, guys, if you've never been to a fall workshop or the Living Free in Tennessee or any of these things, you need to show up and meet these people in the diagram, the Venn diagram. Find the other ones that enjoy the things you do. So I've been talking to Ken and Patrick and Ryan and a couple others about health and fitness, they're into it. And then about homesteading, I'm into it. About knives, I'm into that. And they're in it. So getting involved and overlapping that is probably one of the easiest ways to push it forward. So do you like, I don't know, again, you want to practice a thing. Do you like soccer? Great. Go be a coach. Learn that thing. You already enjoy it anyway. So those things will help sharpen your axe so that you can continually progress and make money, which is what you need. Money is the ultimate survival tool. It converts into anything. So unfortunately, you got to go get it. But if you don't go get it, then somebody's got to give it to you. And you don't want to do that for people.
We also talk a lot on the show about food sovereignty. And I know that's something that's really important to you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's part of a preparedness mentality, too, is having sovereignty over your food. What do you think is really overlooked about food sovereignty and preparedness and involving it?
So it's going to start with Jack, you jerk. So you and all the audience that or the guys that come on the show, it's simple, guys. Just do the thing, like plant a tomato and plant it right by your front door. So you or whatever door you come in all the time, just do that. Like here in Georgia, I mean, you got to be really bad off if you can't grow a squash. Squash just grows great. So grow the thing in your area that works well. Okay, look, I know you say if grow it if you'll eat it. I'm just going to say if you don't do anything, grow the thing that'll grow just to prove to yourself you can do it.
Yeah.
So pick the easy thing and let it grow and try it. The things will taste better because you did them on your own, and the majority of us just don't do it. Like, look, example. I know this is a little bit hardcore. I have chickens. I have a lot of chickens. I probably have 40 chickens. And when the egg shortage hit, I did not have an egg shortage problem. I also eat 10 eggs a day or so. So I want to know my source. So if I want to be free of a system, all I have to do is take a tiny step in that right direction. Chickens may not be a tiny step. Get two chickens, put them in a doghouse. They'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you got eggs. Maybe you don't eat 10 a day, but the less processed it is, the more better. And I know that's not good words, but the better it is for you, right?
More better is an acceptable term on TSP.
You just have to do the thing, and it's not that crazy hard. I think, I've tried so many things. I've had bees, I've had ducks, and some of those don't work for me. I've got chickens that work. So continually try the stuff to see what works for you. It doesn't have to be super complicated. Get a pot, get a tomato plant from Home Depot and just bring it home.
Yeah, grow herbs. You know, grow herbs.
Right.
Like even people that are pretty hardcore on the keto side and mostly carnivore, like basil is pretty freaking easy to grow. Oregano, rosemary, thyme, like just an herb garden on your patio.
Right.
Can drastically change the quality of your diet. And I would add to this, it's fine that you have food. Do you know what to do with it? Learn to cook it. Learn to make it delicious. And one of the nice things about what you're doing is it's pretty easy to make a ribeye delicious.
It is.
It requires a pan, heat, and butter.
Oh, man. An air fryer? It's beautiful.
You know, and don't think it's like people are like, I don't even know how to make a steak. I've taught my 14-year-old grandson how to make a steak. And I'm telling you right now, that kid could go to any restaurant and be their steak guy, and there wouldn't be a fucking complaint.
Dude, it took him
about four steaks to get to where he could do exactly the way I taught him to do it every time.
Yes.
And so, if a 14-year-old can do it, yeah, you can do it.
And I'm not saying it's for everybody, but I feel like, at least in the world that I'm living, it is meat for the win. I tried really hard to eat other things. Guys, I am that fellow. You can say, I know a guy. That's me. And if you need to reference me, sure, I will text with your buddy. Get him off of all that stuff. Whatever. You know a guy who's been doing this for 10 months, and I'm still alive.
Ain't dead yet.
And I'm super active. I just did an adventure race. We go out in the woods and race for 10 hours. So, like, can you do this on an endurance race? Yes. And what I ate was rolled up meat, cheese, and butter. So it works.
Everybody thinks it's expensive, and let me explain why it's not. You will eat less food.
I don't snack at all.
Period. You will eat less food. Like, and one of the most filling things you can eat from it comes to ruminants, and I don't really know why, but it's any ground. It's the ground product.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you eat a pound of freaking ground beef versus a one-pound ribeye, I'm telling you, the ribeye, I can eat a one-pound ribeye pretty simple. A pound of ground beef, about three quarters of that pound is in me. And I'm starting to be like, yeah, you got the meat sweats going.
Yeah.
I don't really know what because it might be a ground freaking rib. I haven't done this because my heart won't let me grind a ribeye. But my gut is if I ground a ribeye, a 1 pound ribeye, and I ate it ground, and I ate a ribeye the next day, the ground meat for some reason, and I don't know if it's because the fat is more absorbed by the body or what, or it's some sort of a emulsification or something that goes on in the grinding process, but it is the most filling thing. And then people say, well, ground meat's $8 a pound. So go buy a fucking brisket and a grinder.
Right.
Because every time I watch, I want more ground beef, I'm like, I got this.
Right.
And I'm not even talking to Packer brisket where it's like huge amounts of fat, like a trim brisket. I just picked one up. I almost picked two, but they only had one good looking one. $4.05 a pound. And the shitty ground beef was $7.99.
Right.
Right. So you said, well, grinders are expensive. Do you want a problem or do you want a solution?
Dude, that's
right?
It.
And, you know, do you want an investment? Or I guarantee the person says the grinder's expensive. They could go pick up the little STX grinder, which isn't the greatest in the world, but it's best thing under $200 on the market. I've got one now 8 years old, and it's probably about to get replaced. It's starting to make noises. $150. That same person is drinking a milkshake every day they call a coffee that costs them $4.99 at Starbucks with a fucking $5 piece of avocado toast next to it.
Right. And what are they doing? So if you guys don't want to do this yourself, I would say the next easy step is do it with somebody else. So go on Facebook and type in like I did. I was like Cherokee County Chicken People. And it's like, well, there's a Cherokee County Chicken group. I'm like, okay, that's good enough.
Yeah.
Now I've got people in my county that are, I mean, chickens is a gateway drug to all the other homesteady stuff. So now I've got people that I can trade with or talk to. And instead of going to Publix and buying a carton of $8 organic-y, cage-free, whatever eggs, I just go to this guy and be like, hey, I'll give you $10 for a carton of eggs. Yes, it's a little bit more, but I know what he's doing. And now I'm supporting the guy who's doing the thing that I would like to do. And it's not me doing the work. So my eggs, I don't sell them because they'd be $100 an egg. I can't keep the cost down. The coyotes come after me. The hawks come after me or whatever. But if you're not going to do it yourself, find somebody, a local that's doing vegetables or doing herbs or doing chickens or goats or whatever. So it gets cheaper if you move your taste buds around. So like ground beef might be expensive, but lamb is just not as expensive. I don't know why. It's better for you. It's pasture raised, but it's like $7 a pound or $6 a pound versus $20 a pound, whatever. Right. So it's vastly
stuff like that. Even if you're doing the grocery store, right? So all lamb, like you just said, is pastured. They don't grain fed. They just don't grain feed lambs. They're not out there long enough. They're whacking them at like 7 to 9 months of age. Right. Most of it comes in from New Zealand. It's all grass fed. And if you watch, a lot of times like, oh yeah, your lamb chop and all that's expensive, or your leg of lamb, but they'll have like the arm chops, which are basically like the pork butt shoulder is what it is. And that shit will go on sale for $3 or $4 a pound. Buy it all.
Right.
Buy it all, take it home, grind it. Now you've got ground lamb. Take all the bones, make a stock. Now you've got all the gelatin from the bones, and you're in it for less than the person that thinks they're saving money by serving their kids freaking chicken nuggets and freaking macaroni and cheese.
So you're converting your time into something else. And that's the thing is, hey, it might take some too much time. Do it at least once or find someone that's doing it and go along with them. Like I went to, I don't process my own deer. I hunt in my backyard, but I don't process. I'm like, dang it, I should learn to process a deer. I got a buddy from the chicken group here in Cherokee County. He's like, hey, somebody hit a deer and I picked it up. You want to come help me process it? I'm like, yes, I do.
Just alert.
I just went over there and I'm like, this is as easy as you thought. Just follow the bone with a sharp, very sharp knife.
It's very easy to do.
So they teach you.
And that's why like I tell people if you're going to get into meat production and you want to go above like chickens, quail, ducks, things like that, you want to go into ruminants, something like sheep or goat is the way to go. I've processed whole cows. We just did a workshop at Country Mama's. We did 2 cows in 3 days with a lot of people. It's a lot of work. I can do a deer. A deer is a one beer job. That's the way I my job's on weekends and I'm enjoying myself. That's that time I'm out in beers. How many beers am I going to drink while I do this? I can skin a deer on half a beer and I can quarter it on the other half. Right. And there's more to do, but it's pretty much done. It's going to go age in the refrigerator at that point.
Yeah.
And doing a goat or a sheep or a lamb, if you can do a deer, you can do that. And hogs, I would say the same thing. If you don't let them get 400 or 500 pounds, if you're harvesting your hogs around 200 pounds, it's a great size, by the way.
Right.
It's really not hard.
And there are people doing that you can follow along. Like if you're in Camden, Tennessee, you can buy one of Nicole's sheep that she's or lamb sheep, whatever, that they're raising. There are people out there to help you with the step. If time is your problem, then use money. So I love this saying. If you have a problem that money can solve, it's not a problem, right? It's an ultimate survival tool. Just use it for what it's for. Hire a mentor to shortcut it. Hire that homesteader. Like, let me just come out and help you out and we'll mess up your property, but I'll learn.
Yeah.
They'll take the extra work. They'll take the extra hands for sure.
Absolutely. Do you see any warning signs people miss of their health or their kids' health, things like that?
I think the thing that scares me the most is that I'm from the 50-year-old man perspective, we rely or think that we're still in high school and they're like, hey, remember that touchdown I threw or I caught or whatever? Yeah, I'm still like that. You are not like that, guys. You need to do something. So people will say, well, I'm just getting older, whatever. It's not whatever. You need to do something. Or they say a thing like I had a buddy say, my resting heart rate is 50 beats per minute. I'm like, well, I know you don't exercise and I know you eat like a death row inmate. So I'm going to say that's not good. You should probably get that checked. So there are signs you can look at. What is my resting heart rate? If you do absolutely nothing, it's probably like 75, 80. That's okay. That's where it should be, but you should fix that. If you do absolutely nothing and your heart rate is 50 beats per minute, dude, you're probably in trouble. Go ask somebody for some help. The other one is if you stand up and you're like constantly getting dizzy, dude, that's a problem with blood pressure. Or on the other side, hey, I ride all the roller coasters I want. It never makes me black out. All right, your blood pressure is so high, something's probably wrong. You should go get that checked out. Another easy one. If you go along with the ride for like giving blood should take, I don't know, like 6 minutes. If you go to give blood and it takes you like 20 minutes to give that pint or whatever it is that they're sucking out of.
Like syrup.
Yeah, that's a problem. If you're syrupy, you need to address that. Go give blood and find out. They'll tell you your blood type. They'll do your biometrics, you know, the heart rate and the blood pressure. And check that stuff out. If you don't know what your blood pressure is, I'll send you a link. There's a device I've been using. What is my blood pressure? And what does it sit at? You should know what it is. When you're laying in bed and you wake up, you should know what that is. So that is your legitimate resting heart rate. Mm-hmm. You should find that out. And when your boss calls you, put it on. See, is stress the number one cause for you? After I work out, before I work out, after I eat something, before I eat something, what things are causing you to have this reaction inside of your body?
I'll add to that. Be careful that you don't have what we call white coat hypertension. There's people, they only ever take their blood pressure when they go to the doctor, and they get nervous at a doctor, and it might elevate their blood pressure 20 points. And you know who won't fucking listen to that? Who should listen to that? Your fucking doctor will not listen to that.
Right.
Right. We have a blood pressure cuff. I've taken my blood pressure cuff records, and the very rare cases I go to the doctor, I don't like fucking being here. And when I'm angry and I'm doing something I really don't want to do, my blood pressure goes up. Shocking, I know. Some people it's more an anxiety issue or something like that. So you have to know what your real blood pressure is on a daily basis. And the other thing I'll tell you, if like you go keto carnivore and you're on blood pressure medication, keep an eye on it as you do this.
Right.
I wasn't even on meds, but I started getting a little bit lightheaded as my blood pressure dropped, even though it was a much more appropriate level. But it was that now you're adapting. Your body has to catch up with it.
Right. So two more things on that. Guys, if you can't tie your shoes like a normal person, you have to do them sideways. That's a problem. The other one is, Ken, thank you for this. If you avoid people like Andy McCann in person, that's a problem. Come talk to me. Don't avoid the people that are pushing the health of your life, right? Talk to them. If you need John Pugliano in your life, go talk to him. Don't avoid the problems of wealth. Talk to an expert. Don't avoid the problems of homesteading or whatever. Talk to somebody. Don't avoid them. They want to talk to you and help you. So, guys, take a moment of your life and ask the question. It's been refreshing to me. Yes, I've been doing this thing for 20 years, but to have guys ask me questions that I forgot, like that are for real, like, hey, why does my body hurt so much doing this? Well, that's a good question. Let's talk about it, right? Should I be taking electrolytes or whatever it is, the chicken stuff? How did you fight the Hawks or the Coyotes? These are good questions that we want to talk about. So you have an expert counsel. Go through the list. Ask them questions.
And we've had you on over an hour now, so let's get toward wrapping up.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned I have a book coming out, and I do. It's coming out Monday. And I said if I could write a letter to myself when I was younger, it would be this book. If you had to write a book or a message to yourself back when you were 30 years old, and it was about food, freedom, and fatherhood, what would it be?
I think the first thing would be show up. So too many of us guys, we just do the thing we're supposed to do, which is, I love it. Make some money and be stable and produce.
Be a good provider. I mean, at my age, your age, that's what was like we were told. When you grow up and you have a family, your number one job, put food on the table, keep a roof over their head.
That's it. I mean, the latch kid keys. I mean, our parents weren't around because they were making some money. And, well, they were divorced and making money, but that's how it went. And you just did your own thing and you watched that. Like, it is good. Make the money for sure. But show up, not just for your family, but for yourself. It hurts my heart to see the people, my normal grouping of people, again, are about 50, 51, that area. And they're like, I haven't done anything in 30 years. And now I'm suffering. I'm like, I know. So show up for yourself. If it does sound selfish, like, oh, I'm going to take an hour of my day to do some exercise or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not. It's selfless because later on, they're going to pay for it. So I would tell myself, show up. I would probably have said something like, hey, pay attention to the five pillars, how you eat, sleep, move, think, and connect, because it's important. I did not spend a lot of my time in connection, and I really should have been doing that. I'm making up for lost time, but you know, I should have done that. I don't know. There's some other sayings that I like the, if you have a problem, money can solve. Spend the money and solve the problem. Don't just eat that problem. Do something about it. And maybe the last one would be, in terms of that connection, I really like this saying, friends don't keep score, they just show up. So if you need to slash some tires, let me know. I'll be there. Just kidding. I'm not slashing tires, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's actually, I like that one, because I always say, like, a real friend is someone who'll show up and help you move.
Yes.
But the guy that'll help you slash some tires.
Yeah.
That's a real friend, you know.
I guess we're going to jail.
Not when you're both drunk walking through a parking lot. Like, that's probably a bad friend. But, like,
right,
the person, it's a metaphor, folks. So you have a problem, and they'll show up and do it with you, even if it's not – even though it's not without risk or sweat equity, that's right.
First, get a knife from Patrick so it's super sharp, and then go slash from tires. But yeah, I would say that's the advice. Like, be a real friend and show up to the things that are important. And you know, everyone wants to be the main character in their story, but Jack is the main character of his story, and I am the NPC, the non-player character. So I want to be a good one. I want to be there when you need me, and I want to realize that, you know, my daughter Evie is the main character of her story. So I need to understand the play that she's in and show up for that. Not just tell her, do your homework, make sure you do your chores. Like, there's got to be the other stuff. If you don't invest in them, they're just not going to care.
Yeah. And I think we really need that message right now. Part of why, like, people are talking about, like, fertility rates.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's a problem there, but it's not why we don't have as many kids as we used to. This is a determined choice that people are making to not have children. That I promise you, if everybody was still without protection, climbing into the backseat of cars, there'd be babies everywhere, right? we have hormonal birth control. We have other birth control methods. And I'm not opposed to that. I'm just saying, like, if we're using them not to prevent unwanted pregnancies, but because we don't want pregnancy ever, then our number of children are going to decline. And we're not at replacement rate right now. And Europe is, like, in a critical zone, right? And this is not good for humanity. And I think it's because we've been sold this lie that children are a burden, right? And to be honest, like, part of it is, like, our generation grew up with what you said, latchkey kids and divorced parents. And most of us that had divorced parents, we watched, you know, at least one of those parents really end up on the raw end of the deal, usually the guy. So men are gun shy of this shit. Like, well, if I get divorced, I got to give away half my shit. I'm going to end up paying child support while some dude shacks up with my wife. And if I'm in one of, like, 40 states, I'm going to pay fucking alimony on top of this shit. And so, like, some other dude's going to live with my kids and live with my wife, and I'm going to pay for it. I'm not into this. And even if they get married, they're like, well, at least if we get divorced, now it's clean.
Right.
And that's led us to, like, not valuing children as much as we should. And I can tell you, as a grandfather now, man, there is nothing more rewarding than helping young children grow. It really is, when they're yours, especially, you know.
Well, that's that purpose. Like, as you guys get into this either individual entrepreneur thing, or I'm retiring, or that last phase of life, one of the best things is being able to give back.
Mm.
It feels good to know that. I mean, I guess your stuff will live on, but you want some sort of legacy, and to know that you paid it forward, I don't know. It's just a great feeling of, okay, I'm okay with death at the end. I'm going to fight it, but I'm going to give something. So yeah, I find it.
I think there's awesome. A lot of us in this demographic, this Gen X demographic, we're having that moment for ourselves, not just with our kids, but with society as a whole. We're not only the latchkey generation, as we became adults, we're the mercenary fucking generation.
Right.
Like, we had no fucking loyalty to a company. Oh, they'll pay me more across the street. Bye. Right. Like, oh, I can learn something else at this company. Bye. And it worked. But there was a point where I think a lot of us started looking and going, yeah, but what else? Like, what am I putting back? I'm taking, but what am I putting back? I'm earning what I'm getting, but I'm also not taking and recycling any of that energy. It's a big part of why I started the show at 36. You know, my partners thought I was nuts when I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sell out my interest and I'm going to go off and do this podcast thing. It was as much for the freedom as I realized when I started it kind of on a lark. Like, I'm helping people. I'm giving back. I'm taking the hard-earned shit that I have, and I'm putting it out there so people can pick and choose what they want to use for themselves. Fuck, I wish somebody would have done that for me when I was 20 years old. If you would have given me a really good opportunity, you would have had to get me out of it with dynamite. Like, I'd have been like a leech and a tick at the same time, like buried into it. Like, if anybody would have been like that willing mentor or something like that. And like, I can't do mentorship the way people ask for, like the one-on-one. It's not me. But I can do it this way. I can do it with a book that I'm putting out. I can do it with courses that we build so that people can decide, like, I can learn from Jack. Or somebody can be like, Jack's a fucking asshole. I don't want to learn from him. That's fine. Go find Andy. Go find somebody else, you know. When I interviewed Adam Curry, who I owe so much to because he literally created podcasting, it was interesting. We had a conversation, and I realized he's doing the same thing.
Right.
He's like, I was super rich and famous in the 80s, a little bit older than me, but not that much. He's a Gen Xer. And, like, at some point I realized, like, fuck, I took everything, but I gave nothing back. And I think our whole generation is starting, it's like, we're the generation of fuck your feelings. But we actually care about your feelings if your feelings aren't bullshit.
Right.
Right? Like, when we say fuck your feelings, we don't mean, like, we don't care at all about how you feel. What we mean is, like, when you're leading your life completely from an emotional standpoint, and everything's about you and what you want, and we are, like, fuck your feelings. But right. When you're actually trying and you're frustrated, when you're actually trying and you're sad, when you're trying to do something, we actually care a lot. In fact, I'd say probably more than our cohorts on either side of us. We care about your feelings at that point. We just don't care about your bullshit feelings.
Right. And like you're saying, so I'm gonna tell you a thing how I'm planning to use the advice that you've got. So I've been looking forward to the day when you're like, here's my information wrapped up in a nice little book. Perfect. Exactly. I'm not the best at reading. I take a long time. I love Audible, but I signed up for the Platinum Ambassador because I want my kids to hear this and my other, like, extended family. I want them to hear because, you know, it's proximity biased. If I say it, they will not believe it.
But Prophet they has no it, honor in his own country. I mean,
that's it.
And I know I said it. It's true.
Yes. I already know where your philosophy's at. So
yeah.
You want me to buy some books? Hell yeah, I'm going to buy some books. Thank I'm going to give these things away. And I'm going to say, you read it. I will give you a Benjamin Franklin. I don't know. I'll come up with something to entice them to actually read it. But this is the kickstart that your kids, like you said, hey, it's like that 15-year-old up to 35.
Yeah.
I've got one of my family members who's like, Andy, it's just rough. I'm like, dude, you're in your 30s, you've got two kids, and this is just how it is. Up to 35, it's a haze. I don't even know how, like in the 40s, like I don't know what was going on. I was driving kids everywhere, all this. Get a firm foundation in a book or advice like this, and you're going to do so much better than just trying to struggle your way through it.
Young generation, their whole thing is they want things that align with their values. The first thing they say when they sign up for a job and they show up for work is, well, when are we going to change the world? You're not. Not in your job. So if you want to do something like that, you need two things. One, you have to build it yourself, and then you need to taste the reality that it ain't as easy as you think.
Right.
And when you go and build a business, you understand, like, gee, I can't really worry about the orphans that don't have flowers in Africa, right? But if I'm actually concerned about that, then I can take some of the money that I made and I can send it to them.
You
can't run a business and be worried about things that are not related to the business.
Right.
And that's one of the big problems that young employees have. They're worried about all these social injustices they see, some real, some imagined, somewhere in the middle, right? But you're not going to change that by taking a job.
Right.
Right? You're not taking a job for the job to be aligned with your macro, maybe your micro values, but not your macro values about all the things you don't even control. And you know what? Your boss doesn't control it either.
No.
Right. So you have to use that to gain experience, knowledge, and wealth. And then you take it and build what you want. And as you build what you want, you'll start realizing, hey, there's a lot of good I can do. But what will happen is, like me early on with TSP, when I really had total freedom finally to do anything I wanted, I tried to help people and it blew up in my face.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's why the guy that I work for wouldn't do it. Because he did do it before I got there, and he learned it. That's what I tried to condense into that, is it's things like that. And then just, you know, how to live your life so the people around you actually value you being in it.
Right.
It's amazing. You can't do shit by yourself in reality. Right. You do things only due to the kindness of friends and strangers combined. And that happens by living a certain way. And if you do that, you will attract people. And I don't mean some mystical bullshit like The Secret or whatever. Like, just people like to be around people that do things and get things done. I have this conversation with my grandson. I'm like, do you notice anything when we do these workshops and he hangs out with us, you know, like about the people? He's like, they're all excited. They all talk to each other. Most of them have a business or something of their own. None of them seem very stressed out, right? They all seem like they're supporting each other. And I'm like, that's because people like that support each other.
Right.
It's like, how do I find people like me? Be the person that you want as a friend.
Yes.
And you will attract. It might not happen tomorrow morning, but you will attract the kind of people. And when you identify somebody as completely the antithesis of who and what you want to be, get them out of your life.
Run.
You can eat turkey with them once a year. You can be nice to them. You can be social. But do not spend quality time with people who don't have at least one thing in their life you want to be just a little more like.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations.
Better than you at everything. But like, I have a friend named David. He's really good at getting to know people really quickly. I'm not. Yeah. I'd like to be more like that. You know, I mean, those are the types of things that we need to be teaching. And we're not teaching this.
In that, I know some of you guys are like me and you've got kids graduating high school or college, or you've got friends with that. Dude, something like this, you've got nearly 4,000 episodes and you've said the same story over and over. Guys, you know what he's talking about. Give this book to them as they graduate. It's going to be huge. I don't even know what it says. I already know what it says.
Commercial or nothing.
Yeah, no, it's not. I just want to say that I'm super excited. For something like this, I've been waiting for a condensed version because kids aren't going to listen to an hour and a half podcast.
No.
But then they read a book. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And as Andy said, you know, please consider picking up a copy, maybe one for your friends. It's backwards on the internet, right? But the book will come out on Monday. People keep asking me about pre-orders. Look, guys, I don't know how many times I said it. Amazon will not let me pre-sell the hard copy book. You can pre-order the Kindle if you want it. I can't. There's no button. I've tried all the toggles. It's not there. It will be there on Monday next week. But if you want to get an email to remind you, just get by the website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, fill out the form, and we will make sure you get a reminder. Andy, you got anything for people? How can they find you and get involved with you?
If you live in Woodstock, Georgia, come see me. CrossFit Garage, this shirt right there. If you don't and you want to work out, garagefitness.online. If you're not into any of that, I have a little podcast, very small. It's called Food, Fitness, and Finances. Hit me there. You can watch the crazy stuff on YouTube or Facebook. As Dorothy said, I post some weird stuff. You can see the goo come out of my feet. I don't even know what it is, but I'll be telling you soon.
I'm gonna have to buy one of them because Dorothy wants one.
I'll give you the link and you can put, guys, this is so cool.
Just send me the link when we're done.
It's disgusting. It's cool.
But I'm telling you, we're getting one, and it has nothing to do with whether I think it's a good idea. And when Dorothy deals with so much bullshit, if she's like, I want that, it's like, okay. If it's a Mercedes or something, we're going to have to talk about it, move some money around in Switzerland or whatever. But if it's something like a couple $100 and she wants it, but it might not be today, but it'll be this month. So anyway, yeah, shoot me that email. And guys, check out Andy's stuff. His website is, his podcast, YouTube channel, all that will be in the audio notes. And so right down there under the video, there's a whole bunch of yummy links. And one of them will be a link to the audio version of this podcast. And if you're watching us live and you click it right now, yes, it doesn't work because we're not done yet. But we will be in about, 5 minutes here. And then about 30 minutes later, the audio will go live. You get all the resources. Andy, thank you for being with us today. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in. Real quick before we go, let me remind you, you can help support us by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That is T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Item of the day for you today was one of the top five best-selling items in 2024 on T-Spaz. In spite of the fact that I brought it to you, I think about a week before Thanksgiving. That's not exactly a lot of time for a product to be in the T-Spaz catalog and then make the top 10, let alone the top five. I think it has a lot to do with the stuff we talked about today because so many of us are homesteaders with eggs and chickens. And one of the best ways to use eggs is hard-boiled, whether you turn them into deviled eggs or use them just as a hard-boiled snack, or you do them as a soft-boiled egg and you put them in something like soup. I mean, there's just so much versatility with an egg that is boiled either soft or hard. We all know the problem, though. You go to peel the egg and it comes apart and it doesn't work, or you try to get it soft-boiled and it's really hard, or you try to do hard-boiled and it's green because you overdid it. This Hamilton Beach 3-in-1 egg cooker is just set it and forget it, stupid easy, except you can't forget it. It does beep when it's done, and you do need to be in the room with it to turn it off and take the eggs out when that happens. But I got this originally because I got tired of not making deviled eggs because I love them. And then I went to my nephew and nieces, and they made these deviled eggs with cheese and bacon in them. And I wanted to make avocado ones. And so I'm like, the same recipe, we use avocado instead of mayo. And I'm like, I hate peeling eggs. And I'm like, they pulled this thing out and they set it on the table and said, we use this and it's always easy. And it was $20. So I bought one and I tried it and I put out my recipe. And I think we sold like 300 of these last year in about a 6-week period. And I got absolute goose egg for complaints about it. None. That's a lot of product to not have one person tell you something don't work with it. So check this thing out, especially if you keep, you know, ducks, chickens, what have you. You ain't going to put your goose egg in there. It's too big. Follow the instructions. Read the write-up for the recipe. It's over at thesurvivalpodcast.com. But just remember, it doesn't matter what you buy. If you start your online shopping at tspaz.com, you support us and the work that we do. Again, the book is coming out Monday. I shook the piker tree. We're going to have plenty of content for expert counsel tomorrow, but I need a subject for tomorrow. What do you guys want me to talk about in the expert counsel show tomorrow? If you have an idea for a segment, again, it's not a show, like something I can do in 10 minutes, TSPC expert segment, put that in the subject line, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. Get that over to me. And if you get it to me, I don't know, sometime today, I will consider it for tomorrow. Also, I do beat up on the expert counsel not getting me material, but to get material, it really helps if they have questions. So if you could send me questions for the expert counsel, we can start building a pipeline of content as we head into summer and things slow down and people take vacations. And it's harder for me to corral all of these cats, like I'm herding cats here. The more material I have for them to respond to, the better. And if you're not sure who's on the expert counsel now, because we've made some additions and changes, just go to survivalpodcast.com. Under the About tab, there is a Meet the Expert Council. You can see all the experts and what they can cover for you. And we have a tremendous freaking team of people. We are so blessed to have people like Andy, people like John Pugliano, people like Ryan Steva, people like Kerry Brown, Nicole Sauce, Nick Ferguson. I don't know where you can go and have access to a group of people, Doc Bones, et cetera, that know what these people know collectively, that will weekly answer questions tailored to you and the rest of the audience. So please help me help you do an even better job than we've been doing now for 17 years. With that, I'll catch you tomorrow with that expert counsel Q&A show for the week. They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.